ESPNFC Daily, K Marie and LME here with you. Hey, Brazil 2, Serbia 0, Richarlison, TJ's boy. You can see why, Luis, 2 goals for him. The second one, absolutely wonderful.
Absolutely magnificent. Goal of the tournament, K Murray, so far. Unbelievable stuff. This is why I wanted people to relax at halftime. I was reading a lot on Twitter, K, how, oh, Serbia are awful right now, and Brazil, why you're too static or whatever. No, Serbia actually were doing a pretty good job against a remarkable Brazilian side who basically what happens is, because this happens all the time in World Cup qualifiers, okay, with Brazil, teams go out up against them saying, look, we can't press high. We can't be too fast against them. We have to be very smart, be physical, and try and win every single aerial battle. So what Brazil does is they become Muhammad Ali against George Foreman. They slowly, round by round, start making you feel more tired, more desperate. And then, boom, in the split of a second, just like the pigeon man himself, Richarlison, you just get a goal. And Brazil win 2-0. Unbelievable win, unbelievable score. And to me, remains the fact, Brazilian, the favourites to win this whole thing.
Yeah, scoring 2 goals for Brazil and his World Cup debut here. But the downside is that Neymar came off and it looks as though he's injured. He was definitely upset on the bench. Obviously, we'll wait to see what happens there. How big of a part will that play if he is injured, Luis?
Yeah, it's a big one there. And obviously, like you said, we have to wait and see what the actual reports are after his staff take a look at him. And it's a big one because, as you can see, Neymar not only is a major leader in this Brazilian side, but he also drives so much of the good offensive play. He doesn't play up front. He doesn't play center mid. He plays kind of in between, and he attracts so much attention from the opponent's side. Now, if there's a team out there, right, that can sort of say, okay, we don't have Neymar today, fine, we'll get on with it, which is exactly what happened at a certain Copa America when they won the whole thing without him, then it is this Brazilian side. They can do it. It's not like Argentina when Messi leaves that squad. They are very different. This team with Brazil, yes, they are different without Neymar, but they have enough weapons. But obviously, nobody wants that. We want to see, well, at least I do want to see Neymar Jr. lead the way for this Brazilian side.
I'm really hoping that Stevie Nicholls' sound is better today than
the last
praying,
time we saw him. I'm praying,
Kay. Let's bring him in because we need to laugh at Craig Burley as well, and he's going to be the perfect person to do it. How are you doing, Stevie? What did you think of the game?
It kind of went the way I hoped it would because, you know, we were so disappointed with Argentina the other day. They were one of the favourites and they just didn't produce. You think all the talk and all the hype and disappointed us. Brazil didn't disappoint us whatsoever. As I said, the game went the way I thought it probably would. You know, Serbia were never going to come out and attack Brazil. They were resilient and defiant. But with the quality and the ability that Brazil have, you kind of felt it was going to be a matter of time. And it was. And actually, when I look at the score 2-0, I'm thinking, did I miss a couple of goals? Because it certainly felt a lot more than 2-0. And again, if you need any confirmation of how good Brazil are, yes, Neymar went off injured, but then you're bringing on Martinelli, you're bringing on Rodrigo, you're bringing on Jesus. You know, you definitely got backup, and not just backup, but world-class backup. So if anything does go wrong, which I hope it doesn't with Neymar, they're still going to be the team to beat. So I enjoyed the game. I enjoyed watching Brazil. Every time we go forward, the whole planet sits on the edge of its seat. So yeah, enjoyed it and turned out the way I thought it probably would.
So Stevie, your audio isn't the best again, but we just want to keep you on for a minute before we let you go, because we wanted to show you a tweet from Craig Burley. Many people have been asking about this Brazil side because obviously there's so many options for TJ. Not too sure when he tweeted this, but he said, whatever happens, I'm taking Jesus over Richarlison all day. Do you think he'll still be saying that afterwards in his defiance?
Well, most normal, and I emphasise the word normal, most normal people would feel a little humbled and maybe would change their mind, but we're dealing with a different animal. And the stubbornness of Mr. Bully will show itself again. And he will throw us, well, it's only one game sort of line. So no, he ain't changing his mind. What's it?
No. Stevie, we'll let you go and enjoy the rest of your Thanksgiving. Great to hear from
Bye,
you.
Bye, Stevie.
All right, cheers. Toodaloo.
See you soon, Stevie. And this is obviously, Luis, not to take anything away from Gabriel Jesus, especially with what we've been seeing for Arsenal this season. But when it does come to Richarlison and goal scoring for Brazil, he is on fire. When he puts that Brazil shirt on, magic happens.
100%. Maybe Craig Burley meant the son of God here, K. Murray. Maybe, I mean, and you can't argue with that, of course. No, come on. Come on. It's what you said, K. What people need to understand is that during the World Cup qualifiers, it wasn't actually Neymar that was leading the way in goals. It wasn't Gabriel Jesus. It was Richarlison. Coach Chiche doesn't really... he's a bit like Luis Enrique like this. He's not particularly interested in how well a certain player of the national team is doing with their club. He just wants to make sure that they're ready to go for the national team. Richarlison, when he puts on that Brazilian shirt, he becomes Romario. He really is that clinical, and he showed it once again today. But to your point, listen, not taking anything away from Gabriel Jesus, what a tremendous season he's having so far with Arsenal, but Richarlison is the number one selection for Chiche out front.
So do you think we're going to continue to see this from Chiche going forward? It was an all-out attacking option for him. He took that. There was speculation as to whether he would. You said a few months ago, maybe even, Luis, when you'd seen this game, you called out that 11 for this game against Serbia. Is he going to continue doing this now that it's paid dividends in today's game?
The only places where I would see a change is the number one is obviously Neymar Jr., because we have to see if he's healthy. If he's healthy, yep, I don't see a difference. Casemiro, 100%. Lucas Paqueta has earned the right for Coach Chiche to stay there. You would you would have to second guess Chiche if he wants to have a second and a double pivot. That usually doesn't happen. But then the most obvious one that you would think, would you tweak it right here, is Rafinha. Because there is just like a line, a list, like a queue of Brazilian wingers that are just waiting to take that spot. Rodrigo, Anthony, etc. But yes, if Neymar is fit, okay, you know, if it ain't broken, do not fix it, my friend. I think this will be the same lineup.
So you say Rafinha there. Does the missed chances that he have today affect anything for him?
Yeah, perhaps. You got to put a few away. I mean, I'm just looking at some stats here, okay, while you're talking. 22 shots Brazil had. 8 on target. I really feel more than 8 should have been on target. And even the ones that were on target, to your point, I mean, I remember one specific attempt in the first half when it was a lovely through ball for Rafinha inside the box. And he messed it up. He put it straight in the hands of Milinkovic-Savic. So I really think that Chiche is probably going to have a word in his ear. But here's the thing. He's more interested in his wide players, Vinicius Jr. on one side, Rafinha, Anthony, whatever, on the other one. He wants them to be the providers to create more opportunities for Richarlison and Neymar when he comes in. So he's not relying as much on Rafinha to do these goals, but he will be definitely saying to him, look, if you're going to get me to this high level of XG, I need you to actually score one or two, because there's a line of people that are waiting to take your spot.
We might have known, though, some of the plans. Obviously, we'll see what happens with Neymar. But Neymar, where he gets a corner, goes for an Olympico early on. I think that gave us a little taste of what was to come from Brazil, didn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. I think he was using inspiration from Aston Villa's very own Douglas Luiz, who's been doing that in the Premier League every week. Yes, I used an opportunity to talk about Aston Villa.
Of course, you always, always do
it. I know. But, you know, they wanted to go for it, right? I mean, what do you think, Kay? Do you think that it was more... Because I was reading things like Serbia have been awful. It's like, it's not that they've been awful. It's that when you are faced against not one or two Godzillas, you're faced with 11, including Alisson, by the way. What are you meant to do? You have to rely on your physicality, on your aerial strengths. And for Mitrovic, who actually had a really good first half, to rely on that strength to hold the ball, I think it was more... This is Brazil. This is why we have them so high up. This is why I have them as favorites to win the whole thing. And Serbia was paying respect to that. Is there an argument to be said? A little too much respect? I don't think so. They were just like trying. They came up with a plan. And eventually, you know, they just had to succumb to the greatness that is this Brazilian side. They are that good.
Yeah, I think a lot of things were quite telling when you do talk about the stats. The first corner of the night, Serbia didn't come till the second half, the 58th minute, just shows you.
Yeah,
exactly. An absolute domination from this Brazil side. It feels like wave after wave, though. You're talking about all that attacking talent. You're talking about who Chiche can bring off the bench. No wonder. And Brazil off to a great start. The favourites going into this tournament. It's 2-0 for them. And when you look at the group now, that's them and Switzerland with 3 points. Switzerland with a 1-0 win earlier today. And obviously Serbia and Cameroon with 0 points after the first round of action. Now, it is Thanksgiving today. And that's why you don't have your fancy background behind you. But you definitely have a lot of love around you today, Louise, because you're with your in-laws, right?
I do. I'm close to you these days, Kmart, because I'm also up in Connecticut. I know. I need to come on by, right? Yes. Yes, everybody. It's not the usual fancy background. We're here to celebrate Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. I am thankful for my family, my friends, including the amazing Kmart and all the ESPNFCs. We're having a good time here. But you and I have a lot in common, Kay, because, you know, obviously coming from England, I'm Peruvian, but I grew up in England and we grew up around the same time. We moved to the US. So we had to adapt to the Thanksgiving cultures, traditions of it. Do you like Thanksgiving? Is it a fun holiday?
I really like it because it's like this huge holiday when everything stops and you just get to eat lots of food and everybody lets you off for that. And I think it's really nice to give thanks for things. I think it's one of my favorite American holidays.
I will give you a hot take. Turkey is trash.
I don't think that's such a hot take.
Yeah, it's not that hot, is it?
I think plenty say that. Listen,
it's overrated is what I think it is.
Now, obviously, the US team are out in Qatar. Many of their families are with them, their girlfriends. I heard today that Tim Ream, because he's older than the rest of the squad, has got his wife and his three kids out there with him.
Everybody's like, parents? Yeah, exactly.
A little bit different to all those youngsters. But when it comes to the team, obviously, they're out in Qatar. So Matt Turner was asked what he would be doing if he was back in the US today.
Every Thanksgiving, probably 30 or 40 of my family and friends all gather at my mom and dad's house back in Park Ridge, New Jersey. So we're going to miss out on that. Mom and dad are here in Qatar, so it'll be a little bit different for the people back home this time around, but look forward to the future of many more times with family.
Very nice.
30 or 40, Kmart, is he Peruvian? My God.
Well, I don't know, you know, I feel like for many, it's any excuse. You go out for a nice walk on Thanksgiving and you see like all your neighbours suddenly with their family and you realise how big some of their families are.
How big is your Thanksgiving?
Today we have my in-laws, so that's my own mum, 3, 2 kids and my husband.
Oh, your mum's there. That's great. Yeah, I got about 7 over here.
Similar numbers. Yeah, it's a good number to have. Should we invite someone into our little party for Thanksgiving?
Let's do it.
On ESPNFC Daily. Let's invite in James Ollie because he's been mingling with the England team, actually, ahead of this big game that's coming up tomorrow, England against USA. Hello, James. Where are you?
I am not in some sort of high-end Qatari prison cell. I am in the media center in the middle of Doha, which is actually a little bit more salubrious than this backdrop would suggest. But yes, it's a cavernous place. But it's 10 past 12 here local time. So there's not many people in here at the moment.
So I know we've got a few questions for you, actually, James. I'm going to let Louise start with them because we want to know some of the England team news. Take it away, Louise.
Yes. So obviously, James, we're interested as England face the USMNT on Black Friday tomorrow. There's a lot of talk, of course, over here about the game. Historically speaking, England actually doesn't do that great against the USMNT, but, you know, we'll see if that's different tomorrow. But the big question is, obviously, I'm hearing, James Ollie, that Gareth Southgate's not doing too many changes, and that may include actually the number 9 up front.
Yeah, I think the whole Harry Kane thing was blown out of proportion, really.
He took it,
as everything is with England at every major tournament. You know, anyone sneezes, it's an injury doubt. But there's, you know, he took a heavy tackle at the start of the second half of the Iran game. He still played on for about half an hour. He came off. There were a couple of pictures circulating about him having some very light strapping on his ankle. He had a scan that was just very much precautionary because he's got a history of ankle problems, Harry Kane. So if there's any issue in that area, it was actually a sort of knock to his foot, like sort of lower foot rather than his ankle that he sustained. So, you know, he trained yesterday behind closed doors. He trained today, first 15 minutes in front of the cameras, and then he did the whole session with the team. So, yeah, Gareth Southgate pretty much confirmed that he's going to start at the press conference later in the day. And I think it will probably be an unchanged team. I have to say, I thought he might make one or two changes. ESPN, we interviewed him exclusively about a month before the tournament, and before that in the sort of Nations League matches, he was talking a lot about the need to rotate. He's got a 26-man squad. England, hopefully, in his mind, will be here for seven matches, and he feels that, you know, you're not going to ask those same 11 to play every game. But I think the manner of the victory against Iran, how well they played, particularly, you know, in an attacking sense, obviously scoring six goals and being so comfortable and in control until they sort of let it slide a little late on, that I think he feels that, you know, let's go and let this same 11 do it again. They've had enough of a break. We're in a period of the season, if you take it, you know, in terms of the domestic season, where we're not looking at June, July, where they might be tired after 50 or 60 matches. I think he feels they're in a rhythm and let them go again.
What do you think the feeling is then, James, given that the US didn't win their first game? Do you think there's any type of different approach or mindset that they'll have going into it, knowing that the US need to get a result here?
Yeah, you know what, Kay? It's funny how one match can change everything, because England hadn't won in six games going into this. And, you know, there were a lot of question marks about the team's form and even the lineup. You look at players like Harry Maguire, Luke Shaw, even Raheem Sterling, who was sort of being selected almost on trust, really, because of what they'd done for England in previous tournaments in 2018, in the Euros last year. But they hadn't been in good form for a while. But that, the just the control that they had and the vibrancy and the energy about them. And also, obviously, having got those 3 points, they are very much confident and know that they've got a little bit of a fallback if something went wrong against the US, that they can still obviously get out of the group if they can beat Wales. So the pressure's all on the US, really, and I do think that will play into their hands, because we know that Greg Berhalter has tried to implement this possession-based approach. And I do wonder whether England might think, well, look, we can sit off them a little bit here, and with the pace they've got on the break, you know, let the US make the running, let them go and try and, you know, they've got to win the game, really. So I think England, therefore, could go either way with it. And that will give them a flexibility that should give them even more confidence than they already have.
I'm a little bit worried when it comes to confidence, James Ollie, that Jordan Pickford might not be up for it just because he lost darts to a certain someone. Is that right?
I mean, probably the biggest victory of this World Cup so far,
I think. what was the score?
Tell us more about it, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was, so the last three tournaments, there's been a players versus media darts match, and it was my turn yesterday against Jordan Pickford, and 51-31. But basically my tactic paid off, which is, you know, your ego thinks that you've got to go for the 20, right? But the next to the 20 is a 5 and a 1. And if you're not good, you're going to hit 7 or 3. I go for 16, because next to 16, there's 11, there's 8, there's 7, there's 19. There's a lot of margin for error down there.
Not I just a 51. Pretty face, Kmart.
No, well, not just a face. And I managed to hit 51. And he asked me before he stepped up, he said, why are you aiming down there? I said, I'll tell you afterwards. And he was going for 20 and he failed. So, you know, my only concern is that the morale has not suffered a significant blow that he will feel. He may, you know, I hope he doesn't turn around to Gareth Southgate and say, look, do you know what? I'm not up for it now. Mentally, I'm not right. I'm not in the right place. Don't pick me. Give me a game off.
Okay, he's going to let 3 goals in and it's going to be...
No, he's making him sharper. He's making him sharper. He's strengthening him. Well,
You could argue I gave him more of a test than Iran did. So.
you saw Jordan Pickford. Did you see any of the other players? And if so, let us know what the vibe was, what the morale seems like in the camp.
Yeah, we saw, I mean, there were a few, Kyle Walker did some other media, Luke Shaw was around, we saw Jude Bellingham as well. Do you know what, it's relaxed. And I do think one of Gareth Southgate's biggest strengths is he knows tournament football, and he's very acutely aware of how important the environment is. I think they've picked a really good base in Al Wakra. So it's essentially just sort of south of the main part of Doha. They've got a beachfront location. They feel they're away, but they don't feel they're in, you know, the hub of the city. I think they've got the base spot on. And, you think about problems that England have had in the past with camps, where I remember in 2010 in Rustenburg, where everybody felt too isolated. It was almost like a prison cell, and they kind of got on top of each other, and those sort of cliques start to form, and the team starts to divide. It wasn't, you know, Southgate's very mindful of those sort of things. And I think what he's done very well is make that adjustment with a very limited period of time between Premier League. Everybody's competing against, you know, the vast majority, obviously, of that squad plays against each other every week in the Premier League. He's managed to sort of get them to park that, get their World Cup hat on, get their England hat on very quickly. And, you know, no one's getting carried away. We all know it's gone for England in the past. But I think they've been undeniably really one of the most impressive sides. I thought Brazil were fantastic tonight. But, you know, they're probably two, three, four of the best teams at the moment in their opening game. And I think that's testament to just how relaxed they are at the moment and how well they've settled into the surrounding.
Meanwhile, Luis, we've been trying to get to the bottom of the Gio Reyna situation.
Because you've got NFL on your head. Gino Smith, Gio Reyna.
Italians in my household.
Oh, God, that's Gio right. Reyna. That's even worse.
So we've been trying to get to the bottom of that whole situation. And it feels as though there's conflict in reports, even within the camp. And even more today when we've seen what Greg Berhalter said in his latest press conference. So he wasn't subbed on in the opening match. When Berhalter was actually asked about it, he said he was available for Wales and it was a coach's decision not to play him. He will be available against England. But after the game, the first game against Wales, he said that Reyna experienced tightness and didn't play as a precaution. And then after this comment, he reiterated, per sources on Twitter, that he didn't play versus Wales due to a coach's decision. This is a bit weird, isn't it, Luis Miguel?
Yeah, it's very weird because Reyna then was asked about it and he was like, no, I'm fine. I'm 100%. I'm good to go. And obviously, you have to sometimes take a player's comments with a pinch of salt because, you know, they're always going to be wanting to play. But to your point, it's a little bit of a miscommunication here. Look, here's the problem. I think that Greg Berhalter really probably should have dealt with this in a different way. Either A, not really mention Gio Reyna at all, or just be like, we're assessing things, we'll let you know, whatever. Or straight away, just say the truth. It's like, look, he's fit, he's ready, but I'm being a little apprehensive about it because it's the return of the USMNT to the World Cup, you know, after missing out on the previous one. Even though he's so great and so useful, he's still young and he's still recuperating from the multiple injuries he's been dealing with in the past 6-7 months. So I want to just wait. He didn't do that. He just said, look, no, not ready. I'm going to wait. And then back and forth. And then Gio Reyna came out. So it's not good. It's not great. But I'm sure that, you know, all of these things will be forgotten once we see him in the starting lineup again.
Yeah. And it might not even be the worst thing. But obviously, you know, in a tournament like this, the tiniest thing like that, it's not even that tiny, but a thing like this, everybody can jump on and make it like a big drama ahead of it. So, James, what's the feeling then again about the US from the England side of things, from their perspective about how this game's going to go tomorrow?
Well, I thought it was interesting that Gareth Southgate, after the game against Iran, he very much pointed out they'd still conceded twice in a game that they dominated. Now, you could argue that the second one was quite a soft penalty, but still, there were a couple of other dangerous moments there that Iran could have scored maybe three or four more. And suddenly you're looking at 6-3 or 6-4 and thinking, this is, you know, you've lost all control of this game. Your attacking players have won you the game, but really you should be able to be more disciplined and really see a game out like that. And he described it as a drift. And I think he feels that, as we've sort of touched on already, because of the way that Berhalter sets the US up, I think he feels that if there's any complacency, if there's any drift, if there's any sort of slovenly start to the game, I think he feels they could be on the back foot. And if the US score the first goal and they get their tails up, then they're in a different situation. So I think they're wary, and I know that there's obviously a lot of focus on Christian Pulisic whenever he plays for the US, but given how well that Gareth Southgate knows him, he used to watch a lot of Pulisic actually when he was at Dortmund because of Jadon Sancho. So he's got that history with him. He knows, okay, he's had this mixed time with Chelsea in the Premier League, but he knows the quality that Pulisic has. I think he's wary of that threat. He's wary of how good they can be on the ball. I don't think we'll see the same sort of high defensive line, high sort of press I don't think they'll want to leave themselves that vulnerable, essentially, because they know the opponents they're facing. But look, they have to be confident because of the way they started that first game. I think they'll expect to win. I think they will win, to be perfectly honest. I think that, you know, I can't really believe I'm saying this because I did feel sort of a week 10 days ago that I was quite concerned about how England were getting on. But that performance was that performance against Iran was so, it was such a game changer in terms of just the players that Southgate's put trust in, repaying that faith, combined with Bellingham really stepping up and the alchemy in the side looked really, really promising. And you know, they will fancy themselves to win this game because they know the prize is not just winning the group or qualifying. It's being able to rest players in that third game. And that was such a key part of, particularly in Russia, when they were able to essentially change their entire team for that third group game. It really enabled them to kick on in that tournament. And I think they see this as an opportunity to really get qualification nailed and then rotate ahead of Wales or against Wales to then go into the latter stages.
Yeah, just to what James was saying, I completely agree. England should feel very confident about this. I actually thought it was a really good press conference from Gareth Southgate, and he said something really good. I loved it. He was asked about people underestimating the USMNT, and he said, look, we are very good at that, right? Meaning we're very good at underestimating people, and we're good at talking highly about ourselves based on very little evidence. And I love that because he's kind of reminding everybody, look, like, we're favorites here, definitely. But historically speaking, look what's happened, and we haven't won anything.
I've just done that, haven't I? That's literally what I've just done.
Well, you've also surprised us because as an English person, we're supposed to be all doom and gloom about everything and say, yeah, well, we can't get carried away about that opening result. So maybe I can stick up for you on that sense, James.
No, but you're right. That quote really struck me. Because he was asked, there was a newspaper headline in England in 2010 that they'd drawn up the group as easy with the initials of the teams, and obviously that came back to bite England because they drew that opening game against the US in Rustenburg 1-1, and that was a completely fair result on the night, and Southgate, this is the essence of the debate about England. Southgate is so invested and understands the history of the England team that he plays with an inherent caution as a result. England got to the final of Euro 2020 playing conservatively, trying to minimise the risks, stopping the habitual mistakes they've made in the past. And what this England team is about now is, can they go and win it? Can they actually go and express themselves, be an attacking force, not let the concerns of the past weigh them down? And that's where they are at the moment. Yeah. But whenever something like that is raised about the US, the US as it was today, you're like, yeah, actually, you've never beaten them in a major tournament. And why are we so confident when really we know it's, one result in the same way the Iran result has given us so much confidence?
Yeah, you know what it is.
A result against the US puts you on the back foot.
Yeah, you know what it is, just to finalize it. He's doing something that, you know, growing up in England, you know, and Kay, obviously us three of us know. I remember in Euro 96 times, even on those days, like, it's the art of war thing. It's like, you need to know your enemy better than you know yourself. And I think Gareth Southgate is trying to alleviate that pressure by saying that, look, let's understand who we're facing, because they're not just like some kids. Like, this is a good team. And I think it's great to do that.
Yeah, obviously. And we know who we're up against. As you mentioned, Pulisic, we know the boys at Leeds. We know how strong some of these players are in this side. And they have that bravado as well, because they want to do well and they're young, and it's their first World Cup for nearly the whole team by DeAndre Yedlin. But with Gareth Southgate, I just wanted to go back to that 6-2. Spoken like a true defender, hey, upset about those two goals.
I've always said that. He manages like how he used to play. Absolutely.
I love Gareth Southgate, obviously. I'm a big Borough fan, and he was the captain when I used to work at Middlesbrough. And he always speaks so well. So we wish them well anyway with everything that's happening there tomorrow. So we've got some people debating in the chat right now as to who actually is the favourite. Because now we've seen every team play, we've got a little taste of maybe what we can expect. You know, maybe we're going to see some teams come out of their shell more in these games because they're going to be forced to. The first games, they were just being a bit more conservative in some cases. Has anything changed for you guys as to who your favourite picks were? Who's your favourite, James, going into the tournament?
It was Brazil. And from what I've seen tonight, I mean, okay, Spain played with an incredible amount of control, but it was Costa Rica. Serbia are a better team. And I just thought the level of control they played with tonight, yeah, that's going to concern a lot of people. You know, one of the big issues about this, the timing of this tournament is obviously the lack of preparation and the fact that teams have not had 3 or 4 weeks prep to really get themselves drilled and get those combination plays and really work on the intricacies of you know, trying to score goals, essentially, which is obviously the hardest part of football. And I think that's why you've seen a lot of nil-nils. You know, the teams are still trying to just make that adjustment from playing with their clubs to playing with their countries. And, you know, when you see the way Brazil played, you just think, okay, if they can do that now, what are they going to be doing in 2 weeks' time? So, yeah, it's still Brazil for me.
Yeah, my final hasn't changed. It's Brazil against... Oh, God, here I go. It's Brazil against England. I said it before. I'm a little worried, obviously, whenever we predict England to go that far. But I still... The only one that's worrying me is Uruguay, because I had them going really far. I've seen what this team has done in World Cup qualifiers and how good Diego Alonso has taken them. South Korea, like we said earlier, they're no joke. But Uruguay disappointed me a little bit. But my final has remained the same for sure. I guess Saudi Arabia is worth talking about these days now.
Yeah, and Canada. Frank LeBoc yeah. knew something. Yeah. He went for Canada. He's gone for Canada.
Have you changed? Has anything changed for you?
I haven't changed. I've got Brazil to go all the way and do it. But picking up on what James said about Spain, it's not something that changed my mind, because in the Euros, they just went out and played the way they did. And remember, obviously, it went to penalties against Italy, who were the eventual champions. But no team gave Italy more trouble than Spain did. So I would really like to see Spain against a really good side, because I think that could be an epic match for us to watch. And I'm hoping that happens.
That's my thing about Spain. Spain is Le Louvre, the El Museo de Madrid. It's a beautiful work of art. But all you got to do, if you're careful and smart, is just burn it. Just smash it down. Now, it's obviously easier said than done. But, you know, and to James's point, Costa Rica, with all due respect, are with Australia the weakest team in this tournament. I want to see what Spain does with a team that really tests you. But they are a beautiful work of art. You just got to go there and smash it. Whether you do it or not, it's a different story.
Lots of games to look forward to. They keep coming thick and fast. We're into the second round of games in the World Cup. They'll be coming up tomorrow, and we will be with you after them. So make sure you're right here with us on YouTube. We'll see you then.